Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Analysis and opinion so honest, it's just a matter of time before they get themselves in trouble. Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Baseball Central for Thursday, June 23rd.
Hey, Jeff.
Well, Mr. Barker, Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. Happy Thursday.
What's wrong with you? Why are you happy?
I'm in good mood. That was a good game. You know what? I like baseball. I enjoyed last night's game. 5-2 win for the Jays over Arizona. I just enjoyed it.
Okay,
Other than the pace of the game, which was ungodly slow, it was weird. I don't know if I've seen a guy with the stuff that Robbie Ray has. Dude was hitting 97 in the fifth inning. His first slider bounced about 28 feet in front of 30 feet in front of home plate. I don't know if I've seen a guy with that stuff look as just completely. Well, I don't. You know what it was like? It was like watching a bad Aaron Sanchez.
That has something to do with where he's doing it at the Rogers Center and who he's doing it to. But let's face it, the Blue Jays are not a bad lineup.
No,
it's real hard to go out there and just sort of fillet it on the corners and. You know, he's trying to hump up a little.
The Blue Jays, 3 home runs, accounted for all their runs yesterday. Russ Martin getting it going with a 3-run shot in the first inning. Eddie on the Edwing T-shirt day going yard. And Troy Tulowitzki as well. And Tulo, 10 home runs for Troy Tulowitzki. And The reason we are talking about the home runs, other than the fact that the Jays won the game.
And I love them.
Largely based on home runs and the fact that Barker likes home runs. I'm a big fan of home runs. But we talked a lot, on my show with Jerry Howarth, and I've written a little piece on sportsnet.ca talking to Pete Walker about this as well. Tom Verducci of SI.com had a terrific item. I think it got up on the website yesterday, on SI's website. But he's done a lot of the numbers and broken down numbers. And the upshoot of Verducci's piece is that home runs are flying out of the park at a rate that might exceed the height of the steroid era before it's all done. You know, the numbers, the percentage of fly balls that turn into home runs is the highest since they've been tracking that particular stat in 16 years. Home runs are up from last year, from last September, when they were increased dramatically. We are in the process right now in June. We may see more home runs hit this month than we've seen at any time in the history of the game. And interesting, I talked to Pete Walker about that, and Pete says, you know, I wasn't aware of the numbers, but he says, funny, because we talk about it in the dugout. And he said, we so many times this year in the dugout, we've had balls hit, and they've gone out, and everybody looks at each other and says, it was a fly ball.
Yeah.
You know, how did that get out? Pete thinks that one of the reasons for this is, you know, one, and this is one of the things Verducci wrote about, there's a lot of velocity in the game now.
100%.
And the harder the pitcher throws, you make contact. Chances are the ball's going
to... Location, too. Power allows you not to have to locate.
Exactly. His other point... he said philosophically, this is Pete Walker, the Blue Jays pitching coach. He said philosophically, we in the past 5 or 6 years, and he's talking about baseball when he says we've gotten to the point now where we still talk about down and away, down and away, down and away, miss down in the zone, miss down in the zone. But we've also started to talk about elevating pitches more because guys are throwing so hard.
Yeah.
And guess what? Major league hitters are the best at what they do. They adapt to that. And I think Verducci also mentioned a point. I found this really interesting. And you know, you just referred to it from your conversation with Russ Martin. He made the point that more and more guys, with the advent of analytics now, the batting averages, people don't even talk about batting average anymore. Yep. More and more guys have realized, you know what? I mean, unless I'm going to hit 390,
Yeah.
I'm going to get paid by hitting 35 bombs. And even if I strike out a lot, I'm going to get paid for hitting home runs.
Yeah.
And the upshoot of that, Kevin, is that guys just aren't worried about their batting average anymore. Guys just want to go out and get a big hit.
Yeah, well, all of those things I would think would matter. Pete Walker obviously is a very good pitching coach. He would understand why these things are happening. To me, what power does, it takes a lot of the guesswork out of it. You watch a guy like Marco Estrada, what do you have to do when you're a hitter? You have to think your way through an at-bat.
Yes.
With power, when you're facing power, you don't have to think about it anymore. Basically, you know what you're going to get. Guys coming out of the bullpen, what are you going to get? You're going to get 96 to 99, excuse me, with a hard slider. Point being, it's something hard. Mm-hmm. I don't have to slow my swing down. I don't have to change my approach. Basically, what I'm trying to say is I look location and I know it's going to be hard.
Right.
It takes a lot of the guesswork out of it. And if I'm on time and I get the bad hit out in front of the plate, what am I going to do? I'm going to hit the ball hard. To me, that's what it's all about. It's not, this era right now is not a whole lot of thinking involved.
Mm-hmm.
Unless obviously you're facing guys like Marco Estrada, where he can, you know, spot corners, go down and away, elevate with some movement with the cutter. He's throwing that changeup. Obviously, you got to think your way through it. Power, you don't have to do that. And that's why, to me, home runs have went up. Strikeouts have went up. Guys don't care a lot about their batting average because, hey, let's face it, nowadays, you always say, guys, you're going out trying to sign power because power's hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you can hit, like you were saying on your show earlier, you can hit 230 and hit 40 and drive in 100.
You're going to
make a lot of money. So, you know, it gets to that. They know basically it's a front foot kind of game now. If I get my front foot down on time, added to their power being thrown, I get the bat head out with a nice, easy swing, I'm going to hit the ball hard.
And it was kind of interesting because in the context of Troy Tulowitzki, you know, we asked him after the game, and I asked him after the game. I said, "Do you have in your mind kind of what you need to see statistically that tells you that you're having a good year or that tells you that you're in track?" He said, "No, I just want to feel good." He said, "I want to feel confident. You know, not even worried about the numbers." And that gets to my point. Is people have been worried about Troy Tulowitzki. They're talking about the batting average. And let's be clear, Troy Tulowitzki is a better hitter than a 215 hitter. But to me, this is why I'm not ready to kind of give up on Troy Tulowitzki. If he gives me the defense he's going to give me and stays healthy enough, and if he hits 30 to 35 homers, 100%. I'll live with that.
Well, to me,
and he's got, 10 homers so far.
To me, he could be the David Price of last year for the Blue Jays. Now he's coming back off the DL. They need that guy to step in and, you know, make up the space for Jose Bautista being out of the lineup. If he could hit fifth in your lineup, now all of a sudden your lineup so long with Martin saying hitting sixth, Smoke hitting seventh when he plays first, all of a sudden Pilar's hitting eighth, which that's power, five-tool guy, whoever's hitting ninth and whoever's leading off. Now you have guys on in front of people that can drive in runs. And in American League East, we all know you have to drive in runs playing in small parks and ball flies. So, yeah, if he can hit the fastball like he's been doing aggressively, sometimes he doesn't have to hit it. The other day, the first game against the Diamondbacks, the very first pitch off of Corbin was a fastball, basically center cut a little up. He took an aggressive swing on it, fouled it straight back. What's he get? Four breaking balls in a row. He walks on the next four pitches.
Yeah.
It's things like that. You can talk pitchers out of certain ways of pitching you by the aggressiveness on the swing you take before that. And he looks aggressive. He looks healthy. I talked to Eric Owens, his assistant hitting coach. He said he's found his happy place. I'm guessing that's he likes the fastball now.
What have you seen? This is four games for Troy since he's come off the DL, I guess.
Man.
What have you seen from his swing in particular? Because we talked about this, and we're not the only ones. Other people have mentioned that one of the concerns with Troy Tulowitzki is at times – before he went in the DL, it just looked like he couldn't handle a good fastball. And he looked overmatched.
He was taking them too, I think.
And exactly. And you pointed that out. He was taking them, which is never a good sign when you're taking balls you should be making contact with. Have you seen anything since he's come back off the DL that maybe the guy's a little more rested or just, you know, Jerry Howarth made the point that maybe the time in the DL let him clear his head a bit.
Yeah, just walk away. You know, sometimes you're failing a lot and you're doing something you're not used to doing, which is not hitting the fastball. And, you know, there could be numerous reasons why that is, whether he's not healthy, whether he's not seeing the ball, whether he's trying too hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously he's coming to a different league. He's learning the league a little bit more. You know, guys are pitching him a little differently. He's seeing a lot of fastballs. because of the lineup he's in, where he's hitting. Guys are not really afraid of him right now. You know, and then you start knowing, everybody looks up at those big scoreboards just like we do and see you're hitting a .170, .180, .90, .205, whatever he's hitting. It's hard. Between the years is a curious thing when you're a baseball player because you're always thinking about something. And, you know, to me, it's just he's aggressive. I think basically he's heard enough coaches, and I've talked to enough coaches on that team that say enough's enough. Just stop going up, because most pitchers now with Troy, because they know he's either going to take it or he's going to take a weak swing at it, they basically center cut their best fastball to get ahead of him. He's either taking it or, like I said, not putting a good swing on it. Now he's very aggressive, and he's going after it with some intention to put it in play with authority. Even though he doesn't, like I said, the first day he fouled that ball straight off, it makes the pitcher think about things. It makes the catcher go, uh-oh. Now all of a sudden he's looking fastball. He's on time with it. He looks like he's healthy. Let's mix it up, start throwing more breaking balls. And we know pitchers, breaking ball's not their best pitch most of the time. They start to hangy, and you know what happens when they hangy, especially at the Rogers Center, American League. Exactly, right? So you can talk, you know, the catcher and the pitcher, the opposing team, into a different way of pitching you by the aggressiveness you do early in counts, and that's what I'm saying. He's aggressive. He's basically, like you said, not worried about the batting average anymore, not worried about what that number is. Mm-hmm. Just going up like Russell Martin had the conversation with me yesterday.
Get a big
hit. I'm trying to get a big hit from my team. I don't care what my average is. I'm going to go up and try and hit the ball hard when it's called for, just like Russell did yesterday in the first inning with the three-run homer.
I want to talk about the bullpen in a minute, but before we leave the lineup, pardon me, and I should mention that Jason Dixon, president of Baseball Canada, will join us at 11:35, the new president of Baseball Canada. He will be along at 11:35. I know you want to talk about the bullpen. And I want to talk about that as well. But we saw Devin Travis in the leadoff spot last night. Ezekiel Carrera, we found out before the game, has an Achilles issue. And after the game, he had a big-ass bag of ice, I must say, in his ankle when he walked by. Devin Travis led off, went 0 for 4, 2 strikeouts. But his first at-bat, he had a pretty good at-bat to open the game, an 8-pitch at-bat. John Gibbons has said that the plan still holds. You know, if Ezekiel can recover from the Achilles, you know, he's still going to be the leadoff guy, and Devin Travis is going to kind of be knocking at the door. Yeah. What'd you think of Devin's approach yesterday out of the leadoff spot?
I like it. I've said this a couple of times.
Because 0 for 4, but other – I'm going to interrupt. 0 for 4, but other people said the same thing. They liked what they saw.
Yeah, well, you got to remember Ray was throwing – you know, 96, 97. He's left-handed. That's different. You don't see that on an everyday basis. And I've said this, Devin Travis is going to have to figure out a way to learn how to pull the baseball. They've made an adjustment, and you even saw it in that short series with the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
They're going hard in a lot. They understand what he wants to do with the baseball.
Oh, they know
now
that he can shoot the ball the opposite field.
Just because they don't watch him every day don't mean that a pitching coach doesn't come in and go, hey, this guy loves to hit the ball between the first and second base hole. Let's not let him do that. So how do we do that? We start flipping slow breaking balls in to try and get the bad hit out in front of the plate, and then we speed him up with a fastball in. Now he's going to have to adjust to the league and say, okay, now I'm going to try and go up, look for it early in the game. I'm going to ambush it so later in the game I can get that. Because that's, you know what that does is that tells a pitcher and a catcher, because that's what it's all about, that you've made an adjustment early in the game, because – now I want it later in the game. I want it. My strength is to go to the right side of second base when you're looking at second base. You want to go to the right side. So how do I get that late in the game? I go up with a better approach early in the game.
And it doesn't even matter, does it, Kevin, it doesn't even matter if you hit it, as long as you send out the message to the pitcher that I know what you're trying to do.
It does. Well, you know, you could hit a line drive to shortstop. You could hit a line drive to left field. It tells that catcher that, uh-oh, he's made the adjustment. He understands what we're trying to do. Now they're going to go back away, and that's his strength. This is what this game's all about. You know, the guys that make the adjustment quicker than everybody else, that's the guys that stay around. That's the guys that are going to lead off, you know. Ezekiel Carrera, you can say what you want. His OBP is over 400. Devin Travis, obviously, the last 7 days has been doing really well at that. That's why he's leading off. That's probably why he's going to hit second until Batista gets back. You know, they're trying to get – Gibby's always doing is trying to get guys on base in front of the meat of the order.
Yep.
Because, again, we talk about this. Pitching's all fine and dandy, but the American League East, they're going to have to hit a lot of home runs, and they're going to have to score a lot of runs. And to do that, you have to get guys on in front of the big boys. And if they keep having adjustments, these young guys, and having good approaches, they're going to be in key spots to help this team. If they don't, they won't. It's that simple. This team now, you got to like this team if you're a fan, because basically it is cut and dry. If you're doing it, you're going to be in that spot. If you're not, you're not going to be in that spot. It's that simple.
You wanted to talk about the bullpen. Terrific performance last night. Jason Grilley hasn't been overpowering, but man, he's given them the he gives them energy coming out of the, he also gives them settled down innings.
Yeah. Well, he comes in, he does it with a conviction. He does it with attitude. He does it like it's his last pitch he's ever going to throw. He's excited to be in Canada. He's excited to be on a really, really good team because he came from the Braves. We all know the Braves are not a good team. He's pitching that way. And every team needs a guy like that. They need a guy they can, you know, hang their hat on. Right now, Grilley's that guy. Obviously, he's not going to go out and do what he did yesterday every time. He's going to battle. He's going to have fun doing it, which we got to remember, it's a baseball game. You got to have fun. But I don't know about you, but I'll be honest. I'm a big fan of Gavin Floyd. I've been a friend of his forever. But I'm going to say this. When he came in in the sixth inning with a 3-2 lead, were you holding your breath?
I wasn't holding my breath, but I was sort of – I was flipping through the matchups to try to see if there's something. Gibby knew something. Gibby knew something I didn't know.
I'm a fan.
Would not have been my first choice.
Yeah, no. I'm a fan of these guys, but because of the people they are. But the way the bullpen has been, you know, basically all season, it's very hard when they're coming in close games when it matters that you're not going, is this capable of us doing this? Hopefully they score some more runs to take a little pressure off of them. But I tip my hats to them. Gavin Floyd's coming in, and I'll say this. You can get through certain innings late in games with your attitude, with conviction. You see when he gets the ball, it is me against the world, me against that batter. All I want to do is get you out no matter how I do it. You got to like that. And then Storn all of a sudden.
Well, I was going to say, how about that? Travis, has there been any update lately? Have we found out who kidnapped Drew Storn and replaced him with the bona fide major league reliever? Somebody did. I don't know. I haven't seen.
Be nice.
I know. He looks good.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he looks confident. That's the biggest thing.
Couple of strikeouts last night. He looks confident. You know what? Even in the clubhouse, he got a different body language.
Yeah, I'll say this. When he gives up hits now, it's not the end of the world.
No.
That double last night. It was basically like, yeah, so what? I'm going to get the next guy out, and I'll get the next guy out because my stuff is good. I'm locating my 92 fastball. Ultimately, so I can get you out of the slide.
It was really noticeable last night when he gave up the double to Goldschmidt. The way he just kind of, give me the ball. Hey,
yeah,
let's
I got
go.
This. So what? You know, he's a really good hitter.
I haven't seen that from him that often this year.
Well, I'm going to say never. I haven't seen it all year until the last couple of times he's been out that basically he's like, okay, I'm confident enough with my mechanics. I'm confident enough that I'm getting my arm in the same slot every time. I can repeat what that is every time because ultimately what I just said it. He wants to get you out with is a slider. Everybody knows it, and he still does it.
And I want to mention, by the way, that both Brett Cecil and Franklin Morales, Frankie Money,
when they come back, what's that do to this team?
Well, if Brett Cecil comes back and is anything like the Brett Cecil of last year, if Franklin Morales comes back and is anything like the lefty guy that Kansas City had, all of a sudden – couple that with Jesse Chavez, who's pitched pretty well. Gavin Floyd, you've got a little bit of depth.
Yeah, and I was talking to a couple of hitters about Brett Cecil, and I said, what's the one thing you were seeing with Brett Cecil? Because sometimes you see you get a little bit better answer from a hitter. Because they look, how would I face – if I face this guy, how would I attack him?
Because you never know the way baseball is. You might be facing a guy in another –
the first thing out of their mouth was when he's throwing – hard mile per hour, you have to trust it, and that gets you to chase the breaking ball. So the one thing we're going to look at when he comes back is how hard he's throwing. Now, we always say, don't worry about how hard a guy throws. Well, when a guy is trying to get you out with a breaking ball, it matters, especially late in the game, because you have to trust it. And what's that do? You have to cheat a little bit to get the bat head out in front of the plate, and he can flip the breaking ball, and he doesn't have to throw it for strikes.
J-Hap last night, and he admitted afterwards, hey, it was kind of It was almost like 2013, slow pace. That wasn't all J-Hap's fault. As we said, Robbie Ray was the pace was.
And Mike Everett, the home plate umpire, was a little tight with the zone. We talked about that the day before about what Russell Martin was trying to.
Both of these. And, honest to God, I don't hammer umpires that much. For me to, like, say something about a guy's strike zone, it has to be noticeable. I thought the two guys we saw in this series, the young guy, Ryan Blakeney is his name, and then Mike Everett last night, I just thought that the strike zone was tight and it was consistent, but Kevin, I don't know if it was the high-low pitch.
Yeah.
But man, and the thing is, guys, they were getting a lot of looks, and this is the tip-off. Guys weren't arguing, but guys were looking. And that makes me think that the hitters themselves are okay.
Yeah.
What exactly is going on here? And I don't, for that whole series, Paul Goldschmidt, great hitter. Yeah. Some of the looks that he was giving the umpires.
Here's what I say. You talk about baseball players in general making adjustments. You saw Marco Estrada having trouble with the umpire behind the home plate with locating down and away fastballs. You talk about scouting reports. You talk about umpires, to me, need to do the same thing. Well, you know what, Marco Estrada, if you watch any, you talk to any scout, you talk to any player, what's the first thing he tries to do? Go down and away, get ahead with a fastball. If I'm an umpire, you don't think I go scouting report and go, hey, this guy just wears that outside corner down and away out. Maybe I should look for it and start, setting that early in the game. Well, you saw that with Mike Everett. Yeah. What does J-Hap do? He gets ahead with a fastball down and away so he can elevate when he's ahead in the count. He can flip breaking balls on occasion. If you're Mike Everett, wouldn't you do a scattering report and go, hey, maybe I need to look at that early in the game so you get in the flow of the game, both sides understand what you're calling, so you don't do what you just said and have to turn around and go, really? Well, this is what we're calling?
And what I find really interesting, if you look at the sequence, is it Wellington Castillo, the catcher? Wellington Castillo, the Diamondbacks catcher. I'm looking at this in the third inning. Okay, J-Hap's in trouble. Goldschmidt walks. Weeks walks. The catcher comes up. He gets called out on strikes. And he looked at and he didn't say anything because he knew he was going behind the plate. Yep. But I'm sitting there thinking to myself, all right, when the guy who is behind the plate has just seen two people walk in front of him and he gives you that look after you've called him out in strikes, that indicates to me that the strike zone is not consistent.
Inconsistency.
Because catchers, for catcher to give you one of those is...
Yeah, okay. Say this, if you're walking to the plate and an umpire is a guy that was just well known for giving you balls off the plate away.
And Mike Everett is a veteran umpire, too.
Well, he's a crew chief.
Yeah.
So, it's something he's been around a long time. He understands the what the flow of the game means early. And that's what I said, getting back to scouting reports, what certain pitchers, especially at home, you're wearing white jerseys. Mm-hmm. That usually means that, hey, I want to start dominating down and away so I can do things. We get in the flow of the game. The game's quicker. It's fun to watch. Everybody's into the game. And then you have umpires that just basically don't understand that this is what happens. To me, that's what it is. Inconsistency with everything. Umpires understanding that he gives that pitch away. You're a batter. You're a catcher. You're a pitcher. You're a player. You understand that. You don't argue a whole lot. But when he doesn't do that and he doesn't start giving it to you, then everybody starts doing what you do, just turn around going and not say anything.
Yeah.
Well, that's sometimes you don't have to say something. Just say basically, clean that up.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice way
and
of
an easy.
It.
Well, you in wouldn't say that way to him, but yeah, on this show we have to.
Yes, indeed we do.
There you go.
It's Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. No Jays baseball today. The Jays have today off before going to Chicago for a 3-game series. Aaron Sanchez against Carlos Rodon tomorrow night. First pitch is at 8 o'clock from Chicago on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 1. We will have baseball for you today on Sportsnet. The White Sox against the Red Sox this afternoon, 1:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. By the way, our friend John Tomasi of WEEI, just on Twitter, has written an article on the WEEI website, essentially telling people to not blame John Farrell for what's happening with the Red Sox. So the Red Sox, they've hit.
Usually when you have to come out and take up for your manager, something's not right.
Something's not right. Yep. So it's interesting. The screws are being turned a little bit. The Red Sox are 39-32, so they're not horrible. But there's really a sense that something's kind of amiss with the Red Sox. They've got the White Sox today, 1:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Big game James Shields with his 21.21 ERA for the White Sox is on the mound against Rick Porcello for the Red Sox. And then this will be a fun one tonight. The Chicago Cubs and the Miami Marlins, 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 360. Wei-Yin Chen for the Marlins. That's not much fun. John Lester for the Cubs. That could be fun. The Cubs, the best show in baseball right now. 24 games over 500.
Yeah, they just got swept by the Cardinals. So, I know it's 9.5. They're up, whatever. But, you know, the Cardinals, hey, they haven't forgotten how to win.
No, the Cardinals, you really forget about the Cardinals at your own risk.
Yeah, and I think Mike Matheny, you know, you can say what you want. When you look over in that dugout and you see big man Mike Matheny standing over there basically leading the pack, something to that. Yeah. You know, you get back that we talked about the Blue Jays last year, having that little bit bully on the block kind of thing. They're taking that over a little bit. Mm-hmm. Well, the Cardinals always had that.
Yeah, the Cardinals are.
Yeah, there's something to that.
Yeah, and the Cardinals are a team a lot of people really hate.
Yeah, because they're good. Everybody hates to hate loves to hate the good. Was that right?
Everybody.
Something like that.
Yeah, everybody anyway. Loves to hate the good.
Yeah.
That's right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, Jason Dixon, president of Baseball Canada, the newly elected president of Baseball Canada, will join us. We'll get his take on the state of the game in Canada right now, which if you look at the registration numbers, is pretty good. And you know, I've got to think that perhaps the success the Blue Jays have had in the past couple of years has seen a bit of a spike in baseball registration. I know it has in our neck of the woods for sure, to the point where some of the fields that have been turned over to soccer fields, kids are playing baseball on them now. So we'll talk to Jason Dixon about that and continue our look at the Blue Jays and around Major League Baseball. It's Baseball Central and the home of the Blue Jays, even when they have an off day. We're still the home of the Blue Jays. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Bum, bum, bum. Welcome back to Baseball Central. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. So we're going to be joined by Jason Dixon in a few minutes. Got to read this out. I think this is so cool. Glenn Perkins is the Minnesota Twins closer. Was Minnesota Twins closer, Minnesota Twins pitcher. He is undergoing surgery today to repair a torn labrum in his left shoulder. Was this on Instagram, Travis? Sorry, this was on Twitter. This is from Glenn Perkins to Minnesota Twins fans. I'm going to read this out. Tomorrow at 1 Pacific time, I am having shoulder surgery that will most likely affect the rest of my career in some capacity. Do I wish I could have avoided this fate? Yes. That's why I rehab for 2 months. Am I disappointed that I can't contribute to our team this year while getting paid a bleep ton of money? Yes, it makes me sick. Getting paid for not doing anything to help was the thing I feared most when I signed my contract. I didn't want to be the overpaid guy. Well, now I am. The only thing I can control is how hard I rehab. So, from tomorrow until I am back pitching in MLB, know that nobody will be working harder than me to get there. That's all I can offer at this time. Peace and see you all at Target Field next spring. That is pretty cool.
That's awesome.
That is pretty cool. That from Glenn Perkins. At Glenn Perkins on Twitter. That is tremendous if you want to check it out.
Jeff, you should follow him now.
I think I might already.
Oh, you do?
Oh, I blocked him.
You shouldn't.
No, I didn't block him.
Is it? Unblock him after reading this.
Why would I block Glenn Perkins?
Well, you've blocked people before for
no, I haven't.
Weird reasons.
Anyhow, we're going to be joined by Jason Dixon in a few minutes. Very quickly, other injury news. New York Mets, tough day yesterday. Jonas Cespedes left the game with what looked to be a wrist injury. Turned out to be a mild left wrist sprain. He's day-to-day. Nothing like Noah Syndergaard, though. He left the game with elbow discomfort. Everybody in New York holding their breath. Immediate examination, no structural damage found. So
that's good for baseball, not only
good
for the
baseball
Mets.
And good for the New York Mets.
Yeah.
The Rangers' Colby Lewis is out for up to 2 weeks with a strained lat. I think that's been updated, has it not? Might be a little longer. And Derek Holland is on the disabled list with left shoulder inflammation. And finally, Brian Dunsing of the Baltimore Orioles is out 4 to 8 weeks with loose cartilage chips in his left elbow, requiring surgery. Dunsing says the injury was suffered Monday in Texas while he was adjusting his bullpen chair.
Strange.
Odd game. Baseball.
I guess it's when it's your time, it's your time, right?
Jason Dixon, speaking of when it's your time. Oh, good segue. When it's your time.
How you like that?
Jason Dixon is the new president of Baseball Canada. Jason Dixon joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Hello, Mr. Dixon. I call you Jason. I am Mr. When I see president, it's the
Mr.
Mr. Yeah,
respect.
Goes along with
Mr.
it.
Mr.
You're supposed to show respect.
Yeah, I think Jason's just fine.
You think Jason works?
Yeah, that'll work for me.
Jason, you know, Baseball Canada, we've talked a little bit about this. Well, actually, we've talked about it a lot in this show. Baseball Canada as an organization it's really had kind of a family feel to it. You know, I was at the Pitch Talks function in Peterborough the other day. Pete Orr was there, and we were talking about how so many of the major leaguers, ex-major leaguers, guys who are on the cusp of the majors, how they've always kind of answered the call for Baseball Canada, whether it's to play in tournaments or in some cases, as you well know, guys, especially when the Olympic funding was an issue, guys cut checks to help keep this thing functioning, to help Greg Hamilton continue to do his good work. Taking over as president of this team, of this organization, what is your number one priority?
Well, I think you've kind of said it. You know, we've got a pretty good thing going right now, and you know, in the last 10 years, we've come a long way. We had our meetings last week, and we look at where we are, and we kind of think back at where we've been, and you know, we've had some great progress, and I think you know more people are becoming aware of it. And you know, you talk about the national teams, and you know, the draft just wrapped up not too long ago. That you see, you know, more and more Canadians getting drafted, and more guys getting drafted higher, and you know, I think the big thing is, you know, we've got that momentum and we just want to keep it going.
Jason, you're a very interesting guy. I got to be honest with you. One of the coolest things that I always wanted to do when I was a player is play for my country. You obviously got to do that in 2004 with Canada. You pitched. Now you are the 11th president, obviously, in Baseball Canada's 52-year history. Tell me where this ranks for you in your life. I know you're in politics where you were. Now you're doing this. You obviously pitched in baseball. That's a pretty good life. Where does this rank?
Well, you know what? I mean, I think you hit on it. You talked about, you know, wanting to play for your country. And I think, you know, I think everybody does. And, you know, I think for Canadians, it's you know, even more special. And so having the opportunity to play for your country and you know, my time's come that, you get to move on and help out in some other capacity to get involved from the board level and make sure our programs are still, you know, where they need to be and make sure they're sustainable and that, you know, the next generation get the opportunity to play for their country. That's kind of the driver. I was very fortunate to play Major League Baseball. I was even more fortunate, I guess, to get to the All-Star game. But, you know, if you ask me about it, I think the opportunity to play for your country at the Olympics is probably the number one experience for me. It's just, it's a different feel. It's maybe not as much, you know, on the business side. It's back to that raw emotion side. And Jeff, to your point, that's why I think you still see the guys getting involved. They've had an opportunity to do it, and it's a spot that's, you know, they hold near and dear. And and they loved it so much that they want to give back and just hope that the next generation gets a crack at it.
Hey, Jason, with talk now that baseball and softball are going to be back in the Olympics, what impact does that have on Baseball Canada and its funding? It does. It makes it easier to get government funding, does it not?
It definitely makes it easier to get government funding. The way that they set up their, criteria is, you know, being part of an Olympic sport. Or being an Olympic sport, has some ranking points. Obviously, finishing or qualifying and then finishing at the Olympics has some others. So, for us to get it back in, you know, funding wise, is a big piece. But I think even more so than that, it raises that profile for baseball again. And I think the spin-off funding that you'd get from some of that is more important. And again, it's just, you know, it's a big piece of that national program. I mean, World Championships and Pan Ams, I think, are phenomenal. But, from an amateur standpoint or from a Major League Baseball standpoint, that the Olympic experience for me is number one.
Given the fact that the sports development model in Canada and in probably the past 15 years has gone, it seems, more towards getting money from the private sector. I think that really kicked off with the Winter Games in Vancouver. I could be wrong. It could have even been earlier than that. But how much of your job as president of Baseball Canada is going to be, getting the message out to some of the movers and shakers in the Canadian business community, making sure that sponsors are on board? Because there, as I said, there's a tremendous amount of loyalty to Baseball Canada on the part of sponsors and on the part of players and that, but at the same time, you've got to kind of maintain it and kind of massage that relationship because, Jason, other sports are going to be looking for money and it can get to be competitive. How much of your job is going to be sort of almost defending the sponsorship turf that you guys have?
Well, I think with our enrollment increasing, from a sponsorship standpoint, and anybody that wants to become a sponsor, obviously they're looking at, with their sponsorship dollars, what is the impact? And, as we start to grow memberships, as our organization in general gets higher in the rankings as far as where our national sports are ranked, that only helps the cause. I think, as our profile starts to raise with, obviously our connection to the Jays and as they do well and as baseball in Canada, starts to gain some momentum, so do we. And I think, that is a big part of, helping us along is, from the president's role. I mean, we oversee what the office staff is doing and we maintain it from a governance level, but it's really the office staff that drives some of those things. You get a snippet of it, I guess, when you see the alumni banquet each year, that Greg Hamilton does a lot of work and the rest of the staff do a lot of work for. You see some higher profile people there. So it's constant work. It's competitive, on the baseball field, but like you said, it's competitive in the business world too. You're always fighting for the sponsorship dollars and yeah, they are important and we'll continue to work hard to maintain those and grow them.
Yeah, Jason, to further that point, does it make it easier with your job to say that you Canada's team, the Toronto Blue Jays, actually has Canadians on it playing a big part on the Blue Jays team? Does that make it easier for you?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, in Canada, we love our Canadian content, right? Whether it's on the radio or whether it's on the baseball field. I mean, it makes a big difference when you got a Russ Martin and you got a Michael Saunders, and then I think about Mike's three home run night the other night. Like that's big news, and we're a proud group Canadians, so we love to see our own guys. I mean, we love to see all the guys from the Jays, but, when there's a Canadian mixed in there, we really love that too. So, yeah, it is important.
Jason, very quickly before we let you run, what is the state of the game right now as far as registration is concerned?
You know what? We are looking at, we're still, compiling numbers, but we're looking at somewhere right around that 20 to 25% increase of our membership. We had 120,000 last year, so we're going to see it jump again. Just in talking with local groups and some provincial levels, they've hit their capacity, for this year and already thinking, what am I going to do next year that I can create more teams and I need more coaches and I need more fields. So, I mean, it's mm-hmm. It's a really good problem to have.
Have you also found that, much as we've seen in hockey and some other sports, there's a danger that families get priced out of the sport because of the cost it takes, especially when you get to an elite level, when you start traveling and that. Is that something you're aware of? Is that an issue that Baseball Canada is concerned about, or have we kind of been able to keep that under control in Canada?
You know what, you're always keeping an eye on you know, the product that you're putting out there, and I think comparatively we do a really good job. You know, there are some that are pricey, and I think, you know, we do a good job of what we do. We're pretty limited as far as, you know, the equipment needs and some of the other things, and but you're always keeping an eye on it, right? Because the biggest thing is you want to make it accessible to anyone, and you'd hate to start to price kids out because they couldn't afford to play. And we always work to try to find avenues to get them to play, and we've got different programs that help with that. So we're definitely very aware of it, and we don't want to price anybody out of our sport.
Jason, we're going to let you run. Thanks for your time. Congratulations, and best of luck.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, good luck.
Jason Dixon, the new president of Baseball Canada.
Sounds like Canada's
replacing Ray Carter, who did a terrific job. Yeah, he's a sharp dude. You know, I can tell you from talking to parents whose kids are playing some of the Ontario teams, like the Ontario Blue Jays or some of the travel teams around the country, there is some concern that it's getting like hockey, where it's getting to the point where it's going to cost you double digits a year to keep your kid in the sport.
Yeah.
And, you know, hockey's got an issue because you're pricing out, and you can have all the programs you want. Grassroots programs are great, but you're still losing a lot of kids because of the cost of the game. And it's something I think baseball has to be, baseball in this country has to be especially aware of, because you can almost get away with it in Canada because of the number of people who play hockey. I don't know if you could get away with it in Canada because of the number of people who play baseball. But we appreciate Jason Dixon joining us, and relatively confident that with people like Jason Dixon and Greg Hamilton around, there will be some sort of control exercise. We have no Euro picks. I play the music anyhow. I just like the music. I am not going to make a joke about a baguette. I'm not going to ask you to spread my foie gras and see my Ballon d'Or.
Well, the word
like
is
that.
My record yesterday was going to knock me down a couple of notches.
Yeah, you sucked yesterday, man.
Thank you for that.
You were wrong on Iceland and Austria. You were wrong on Italy and Ireland. You were wrong on Sweden and Belgium.
Well, that one's your fault.
Well, it's not my fault. You said that it was a big match for Ibra. And
obviously it was.
I tried to talk you out of it, as I quite often do.
Congratulations. You did not do it.
Barker's record is 10-6-7. He has had one perfect call, England over Wales, 2-1. Now, I know that, Kevin, you look at that and you go 10-6-7, and you go, hey, I've picked 16 of 23 right. Unfortunately, in Vegas, you would be...
Hey, where are we at? Yeah, are we in Vegas?
No.
All right.
Anyhow, so there you go. 17 to 23? Shut up, Travis.
Ooh, Travis is smarter than you.
10-6. How can it be 17? You guys, the math doesn't... Did we have an intern do this? Because the math doesn't add
Travis
up.
Travis did it.
Oh. Okay, anyhow.
Oh, boy.
I should know that. So there you go. No Euro picks from Barker today.
It's a day off?
It's a day off.
Nice.
Who was your most disappointing team at the Euro?
Wales.
I thought you were going to say...
No, I got to say Italy, maybe.
No, Italy's good.
Portugal, I guess.
Yeah, Portugal's good. Portugal's a good one. When in doubt, go with the Portuguese. Barker's Euro picks will come back. We'll do them on Friday. We'll do them tomorrow because we'll have matches, but we don't have any today, so there's no point. And we understand that you're ready to make a bold call in the Copa America as well tomorrow.
So. Oh, I'm excited.
That's good. For Kevin Dixon and Jason Barker.
Jason Barker. Man. This show has your name
for
on
Jason
it
Dixon and Kevin Barker.
That's amazing.
And after today's show, Jason Dixon may want to be referred to as Jason Barker. I'm Jeff Blair. Thanks for joining me in Baseball Central. Have a great day, everybody. Jeez.